This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. It is Friday, yes, April 9th, 2021. WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, AM 950 Radio, Minneapolis, St. Paul, the voice of progressive Minnesota. Wake up, everybody. Wake up, rise and shine. Give God your glory, glory. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. This is going to be great, 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 great. We got a lot to talk about today. The Derek Chauvin case. This murder trial is really becoming very specific. We're going to be talking about the trial and what the atmosphere is like in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I think it's important for us to really understand the context in which all of this happened, right? We need to understand that. And Reverend Jerry McAfee and Jonathan Jackson and Dwight McGee are going to be with us to talk about that. And then we're going to be talking with Dr. Shanina Knighton about what we need to do to resist infection. How she's an infection prevention specialist. We have some special questions for Dr. Deborah Verholden about COVID-19. You know, I want to educate, not frustrate, and not frighten anybody about this, because I think this is something that we can triumph over. But we need more information, everybody. And so that's what you can get on the Santita Jackson Show. Meet my morning stars. Oh, my goodness. They're already there. Shirley from Philadelphia. Daphne. Rashidi. Hey, Barbara Jean. Shirley from Philadelphia. Raphael. Zenobia. Samantha. Carissa. Hannah. Maddie. And Marnie. And Chaperl. And Vanderlei. All my brothers and sisters down in Brazil. You know I love y'all. Love you. Love you. Love you. Robert Williams is going to be paying close attention to your election down there, hoping that Lula da Silva gets back in there so he can make the necessary changes for the people that he started trying to make more than a decade ago, that he'd been working for toward all of my life. Robert Williams and Jewel, and oh my goodness, please, you all, I want you all to call me or text me. I'd love to hear your voices at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. Let's talk today. GWC Entry Lawyers will give you an opportunity to text, and I think it would be wonderful to hear your voices today, to know what's on your mind. Just even if you just want to, it might even be off topic. I would love to hear your voices today on the Santita Jackson Show, because, of course, it's the end of the week, and, you know, I want to know what's going on, what you're thinking about, what you've seen, because there's a whole lot that's happened to a whole lot of people this week. And, you know, I think it's important for us to talk with each other and vent, because we're not seeing each other like we used to, although those doors are opening again. So, everybody, let's get to some of these headlines. In Chicago, it's going to have, we're going to have a high of 64 degrees today, partly cloudy. Minneapolis, St. Paul, a high of 53 degrees, rain, and it won't be purple, everybody. The Dow closed up 57 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed up 140 points. The S&P 500 closed up 17 points. Wow. We're in the midst of the baseball season, everybody. The Twins, wow, they really clobbered the Mariners 10-2. The Cubs were triumphant over the Pirates 4-2, and the White Sox shut out the Kansas City Royals 6-0. All right, everybody. Wow, the right wing, according to this Washington Post op-ed piece, the right-wing media keeps smearing George Floyd with this racist no-angel narrative. Now, that's being countered by the prosecution. They're arguing on behalf of George Floyd's life. Indeed, yesterday, we saw the pressure on Derek Chauvin's knees, on George Floyd's neck and back, made it virtually impossible for the handcuffed man to breathe as he was pinned face down on a street and would have killed any healthy person, according to Mark Tobin, who is a Chicago area pulmonologist and critical care doctor who specializes in the science of breathing. He testified that the pressure of Chauvin jamming his knees into Floyd's body cut off oxygen and led to brain damage within minutes, sparking an arrhythmia. That is, his heart started fluttering and just was having a hard time beating, that caused his heart to stop. He characterized Chauvin's knee as being on Floyd's neck the vast majority of the time. He said, and I quote, Dr. Tobin said, 1 second he's alive, 1 second, he's no longer. What do you think about that, everybody? Call me, text me, 773-763-WCPT. In the meantime, as we're watching these voting laws changed. There is a video, a leaked video, of a recent presentation by a man who identifies himself as a Republican official in Harris County, Texas. He says that the party needs 10,000 Republicans for, quote, an election integrity brigade, close quote, just in Houston alone. Election Integrity Brigade. Wow, it's an army, everybody. And they're going to be monitoring polls in mostly black and Hispanic Houston precincts. He then pulled up a map of the area's voting precincts and pointed to Houston's dense, racially diverse urban core, saying that the party specifically needed volunteers with the confidence and courage to go down there. This is where the fraud is occurring. This is what is happening, everybody. We are in the midst of the 2020 political season, and don't you forget it. Everybody, hospitals are seeing more and more young adults with severe COVID symptoms, according to the CDC. CDC Director Dr. Rachel Walensky said that hospitals are seeing more and more younger adults. The data suggests, quote, that this is all happening as we are seeing increasing prevalence of variants, and with 52 jurisdictions now reporting variants of concern. Wow, everybody, you're going to be talking with Dr. Deborah for holding Dr. Shalina Knighton about that in a minute. Indeed, they're saying that the rise of these coronavirus variants will define the next phase of the pandemic in the United States of America. Interestingly enough, 13 people at a COVID-19 vaccine site in Colorado had adverse reactions to the J&J Johnson vaccine on Wednesday, and so they shut down the operations, according to this report. Apparently, they're going to reopen very, very shortly. There is a Venezuelan mayor in the center of Venezuela. He has begun placing red warning symbols on the homes of people with COVID-19 and also threatened to cut welfare handouts for those breaking quarantine, everybody. And guess what happened with the European Court of Human Rights? They ruled on Thursday. Now, this is the European Court of Human Rights, that obligatory, that is mandatory, vaccinations can be seen as necessary in democratic societies. This is a landmark judgment, everybody, after a complaint brought by Czech families over compulsory jabs for their children. Wow. What do you think? Do you think we'll have court cases like that here in the United States? We just might. Congress is urging President Biden to reject this. They're calling it an unconscionable $715 billion Pentagon budget. Wow. President Biden on Friday is reportedly expected to request $715 billion for the Pentagon for fiscal year 2022. And now it's a slight increase from the previous year and a far cry from the substantial reduction that progressive lawmakers and advocacy groups are calling for. The U.S. population growth is the lowest it's been since 1918, and they're canceling the Independence Day parade on the National Mall. Oh, my gosh, this is the 4th of July, everybody. And there's an intelligence report that is saying that things are going to be pretty bleak in the United States, the world's future as well. They wrote in a report that was released yesterday that the coronavirus pandemic has deepened economic inequality, strained government resources, and fanned nationalist sentiments. But let's end this on a good note. There will be a new Prince album, everybody. That's right. Welcome to America. He resisted releasing it in his lifetime, and in fact, he had a tour, but he did not do any of the songs from this album. We cannot wait to hear it. It will be debuted for the first time on 60 Minutes this Sunday night. Welcome to America. But now, welcome to some of the finest preaching you ever want to hear. Pastor Tisha Williams, boy, oh boy, we need you in Chicago, but you know, we have you everywhere. First Baptist Church in Bridgehampton, New York. Give us some good news.
Good morning, Santita. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, as always, for having me. So today I want to talk from this subject. I'm a bodybuilder. You know, it's spring again. In the words of that great theologian, Bismarcky, it is spring again. And that means we're going to be wearing a little less and showing a little more. So people are right now focused on getting their bodies together. We're focused on getting fit. And so today we are working out. The Greek word for discipline, ironically, is the word from which we get our English word gymnasium. And since it means discipline, we have to come to associate it with physical fitness. But in the Bible, the word means spiritual fitness or spiritual discipline. And I can hear someone saying, Tish, every day that I wake up, I feel like I'm working out. What's your workout? Some of you may be runners. You feel like you're running for your life. Some of you may be on a treadmill right now, walking fast and headed nowhere. Or maybe perhaps some of you are spinning, as in spinning your wheels. This is not the type of workout that God intended. God wants us to build our muscles so that we might resist what the enemy throws our way. But before you even begin any type of strength training, you need to warm up. The warm-up prepares the body for exercises that gradually increase the heart rate and circulation, that loosens the joints and increases blood flow to the muscles. Don't you know today that prayer is our warm-up? Much like working out, we often rush into our daily lives without properly preparing our spirits for the events of the day. And that's dangerous. You need to pray in the morning so that God might increase your heart rate, the rate at which your heart can accept that which seems unacceptable, so that God might increase the blood flow. You may be facing something that you need to plead the blood over, and so that God can loosen your muscles, your mind muscles, so that you might let go of negative thoughts and think clearly today, your mouth muscles, so that you might say, thank you, I'm sorry, and I love you as the opportunity presents itself. But I want somebody to say today, Lord, just don't loosen my mouth muscle, contract it also so that I might know when to keep silent. Prayer is the warm-up that starts your day. Jesus was an expert at warming up with prayer and rising very early in the morning. He departed and went out to a desolate place, and there he prayed. But prayer is also our stretching exercise. Prayer stretches beyond your power and taps into God's power. What seems unbearable is now doable. What seems insurmountable becomes conquerable. What seems like a mountain becomes a molehill. Prayer stretches you beyond what you see to God's vision. But here's the also the thing. Warming up prevents injuries. In other words, if you don't pray, somebody might get hurt. I heard somebody say amen right there. If I don't pray, I know for sure. But live hanging the balance. Somebody might get hurt. And you know what? We need to stretch and warm up and pray. I'm still young, I'd like to think, but I'm old enough to admit that I still need a good stretch before I start my day. I don't know what getting out of bed looks like for you, but let me be honest. For me, it looks a little bit like the evolution of man. You know, I start out down here, and eventually I kind of make my way up, and eventually I'm standing tall. It's the same with morning prayer. In order to face the day, you've got to talk to God in the morning, because when you consider all that you have to face and all that you must endure, chores and assignments, bills and traffic, temptations, coworkers and aggravating bosses, it can make you feel low. But once you have a little talk with Jesus, by the end of the prayer, you are standing tall. Prayer today is the warm-up before you start the day. And like any other form of exercise, it requires repetition to be effective. Can I call on Dionne Warwick here? Ooh. Dionne Warwick had a son say a little prayer. She said, the moment I wake up, before I put on my makeup, I say a little prayer for you. While combing my hair now and wondering what dress to wear now, I say a little prayer for you. I run for the bus, dear. But while riding, I think of us, dear. I say a little prayer for you. Now, Santina, we don't know who she was praying for, but I know one thing. They were blessed because she kept praying for them. It was repetition. Faith is a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. And here's what I love about physical fitness. It's something you have to do for yourself. The pain and the gain belongs to you. Do you know how badly I'd love to send someone else to the gym for me? Do you know how much I would love somebody to do my workout for me? But it's the same with faith fitness. It's something you have to do for yourself. There are moments in life where people can have a Dionne spirit and pray for you, but there are other circumstances where only a private session will do. There are great benefits to having someone pray for you. As a matter of fact, having a prayer partner is highly encouraged, much like having a workout partner. Here's the good news today. God is not only our workout partner, but God is our spotter. Spotting in weight training is the act of supporting another person during a particular exercise with an emphasis on allowing the participant to lift or push more than they could normally do safely. And I'm so glad today that when we find ourselves being crushed under the weight of life's worries, God is our spotter. When we find ourselves pressed on every side by problems, God is our spotter. When we find the load of our labor seems too hard to bear, you guessed it, God is our spotter. When what's overwhelming is overweighting you, God is your spotter. Here's what's great about a spotter. They don't take the weight off of you. They just help you to bear it. Oh, one more time. They don't take the weight off of you, but they help you to bear it. That's what a good spotter does. So, are you ready to work out today? Somebody say today, I'm a bodybuilder. And that's the good news.
I'm a bodybuilder, and that is the good news. Forever and ever, you'll stay in my heart. Oh, my goodness. Get out of here. Come on now. I say a little prayer for you. Come on, girl.
Yes.
I had Aretha on one side and Dionne Warwick on the other. Equally great.
Right,
thank
right.
you. Yes, I did. Yes, I did. Equally great. They brought something else, but Burt Bacharach and Hal David wrote that song.
That's
I say
right.
a little prayer for
That's
you.
Right.
Oh, yes. Amen, amen, amen. Dr. Deborah, stay right there because we got Dr. Deborah Verholden on with us, and we're going to have Dr. Shanina Knighton, infection prevention specialist, on with us at the bottom of the hour. But I have some quick questions, you know, as we all do, for Dr. Deborah Verholden. Welcome to the show. Welcome home, as shall I say, Dr. Deborah Verholden. We are in the midst of this vaccine moment, right? And I just saw my doctor yesterday. So we were talking about, you know, okay, how are you feeling, yada, 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 checking on my brothers, because I think all of my brothers have been vaccinated. I've not been vaccinated yet, neither have my mother and sister. Boom. Not that we won't, but we're just waiting. You know, just waiting, biding our time. But we're seeing that California is expecting a nearly 90% drop in J&J vaccines next week, leading to fewer first-time appointments. Now, we've been talking about the spoils in these vaccines, you know, that people have been, there have been some mistakes made as they've been formulated, as they're being manufactured. And I asked you yesterday, will, you know, losing 15 million doses, 62 million others compromised, will this disrupt the chain of distribution? And you said, absolutely. And here it is, Dr. Deb. So what are we to do? Because now more and more people are inclined to get the first shot.
Yeah. So good morning. Good morning. Good news got me all fired up and up. And I am holding my copy of I See You, Sis, by the way.
That's right. That's right.
What she won't tell y'all, though, what she won't tell you is this ain't a spectator book. I was thinking I would get a book, and, you know, she does it to us every Friday, that I would have my book and she would do it to me in the book, you know?
Mm-mm.
It's work. You got to do work.
That's
you
right.
You got to do some soul searching and digging and looking in yourself. It's things you got to answer and questions you got to contemplate on. Like, this is the book that if you do the work, you shouldn't finish this book the same person when you started it.
Mm-hmm.
So I
Amen
just want to put that little plug out there for Sister Tisha.
Thank
if you
thank
really
you.
Have hope for improving your life and seeing how you see yourself, this is it right here.
Amen.
I got my copy, and I got one for my girlfriend. I didn't realize what it was. Now that I do, we're going to get a whole group around me.
Oh, my gosh.
Okay,
but you know what?
Yeah.
And then, amen. I've got 4.5 minutes here for you. But you know what? We're going to commit to doing I See You, Sis, next week on the Santita Jackson Show. We'll just pick a day, okay? Because we need to sit down and we need to be some faith builders. Dr. Deb, what's going on with these vaccines? More and more people want them, but now... We're seeing problems with manufacturing.
So remember when our friend from Hopkins came out and said we would be at herd immunity by now? And I said, mm-hmm. that is, and I get it. People so want hope in this pandemic. And they can have hope. They can generate that for themselves. They can have hope. But when you see scientists saying things that are giving false hope, you know, it's like the snake oil salesman where people are, you know, telling you they can make it rain or, you know, this magic thing is going to cure something for you. You know, I want people to see the vaccine as an imperfect and important layer of protection, a piece of the picture, a piece of the pie. It's not going to solve all this problem. It's not going to get us out. And I do think that people's hope and faith can sustain them, but also what will sustain people is good old-fashioned prevention. And I love it that Dr. Knighton is going to come on because she's going to share about what that is for people. All it takes is one thing to go wrong, one glitch at a production facility, and millions of doses gone right then and there. And, you know, a lot of those people, these appointments are being made. They're trying to make them as far out as possible, but it's hard to make them too far out when you're getting your numbers for how much vaccine you're going to be getting a week in advance. So some of it is you're making appointments based on hope, based on faith that what you're being told is going to happen is going to happen. And it's not because we have bad actors. There's nobody at the facility that ruined all these doses on purpose. We're humans, and real human error occurs, and we all have to include that in the plan. So places like California with big populations were slated to get a bigger share of the pie. So mistakes like this impact them more greatly because they have more people. Mm. So again, the bottom line for me and for others is what is in your hands is your own behavior. That is, if it ain't nothing about where the vaccine is coming from, what happened in the plant, what your governor is doing, if this political party wants to wear a mask, if that scientist says you can do this after vaccine, what you can control is what's in your hands. You can control your arms and legs, and you can be a credible messenger in your own community with your friends, with your family, with your coworkers, with your loved ones. So I got to keep saying this. People have to continue to do the right thing and practice the protocols and practice prevention. And I don't care what these people keep telling you. And the CDC, man, I talk about hope. I had a lot of hope that the CDC would show up very different after Dr. Redfield was out and the new director was in. And they're just adding to all the mixed messaging at the same time. Mm-hmm. They're adding to the mixed messaging. And it's heartbreaking for me. It's heartbreaking because I just know they can do better. But I want our people to know the biggest thing that you can do is practice prevention. You don't need 10 masks. You don't need the Jacqueline Jackson mask. Okay, I know your mom had y'all out here with mattresses on your face.
Yes.
So don't do do the least either.
And she had us out here when they were telling us we didn't need them. So she said, no, you need them. Now, if they're wearing them in Asia, you need them here. And she said they needed them in Asia 40 years ago. So, I mean, even though the mask that my mother made, they were suffocating. There's no question about it.
I couldn't breathe.
Couldn't breathe. Jonathan was trying to get through that Costco. He said, I had to stop and bend over. How about that, everybody? Had to stop and bend over. Everybody get the book, I See You, Sis. And Pastor Stephen Thurston's book, Mirror Moments. They really do help us to look at ourselves. But next week, we're going to talk with you and just we're going to have a get-together on I See You, Sis. These great women in the Bible who were just like you and me. Whether you're in or out of the faithful, I don't care about that. This is about us growing and getting right and being well together. The Santita Jackson Show, going to have some more COVID-19 questions about immunity and so much and what you can do to protect yourself. We still have to do that on the Santita Jackson Show, WCPT and AM 950 Radio. Back in just a minute.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Happy Friday, April 9th, 2021. I'm Santita Jackson, WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station, and AM 950 radio. The voice of progressive Minnesota. At the top of the hour, we're going to have Minneapolis, Minnesota's Reverend Jerry McAfee and Dwight McKee and Jonathan Jackson from the Rainbow Push Coalition, talking about really what's going on in Minneapolis. You know, this is a local story for everybody up at AM 950 radio. I mean, and they're playing this on the channels, and this is live. You know, this is very deeply, deeply personal. It's deeply personal to all of us for a lot of reasons. But in Minneapolis, I think we need to understand what is going on as Prince's album, boy, how prophetic is this? His new album will be debuted on 60 Minutes this week, Welcome to America. So let's get right to it. Of course, we have Dr. Deborah Verholden, Associate Dean of Public Health at Michigan State University, and Dr. Shanina Knighton. She's from Case Western Reserve out there in Ohio. We love it, love it, love it. Infection disease specialist, infection prevention specialist, shall I say. And we need that as we're watching these COVID cases, as we're watching a rise in cases, as we're watching the more and more variants that are supposed to be more, oh my goodness, well, it's easy, more easily transmissible. They're supposed to be harsher. So there's a lot going on, and we need to know, first of all, let me just start with this question. This comes from NBC Chicago, because everybody's looking at all of this stuff, Dr. Shanina Knighton. Can you spread COVID after receiving the vaccine? That was just a very simple question that NBC Chicago asked.
So the answer is going to be yes. The thing is the likelihood of you spreading it minimizes, because we're talking about these strains. And Dr. Verholden alluded to this maybe a couple of days ago, that if we're all playing in the same sandbox, then we're likely to encounter the same bug or the same germs or the same strain, so say. So it means that we're all likely to have the same strain. However, if we're talking about person X that has been in this particular environment, exposed to these particular factors, such as different foods, such as being around different people, then that means that what we call, I'm trying to describe this easily, but their microbiome, meaning their bodies, I'm trying to describe it as easy as possible, but their body is, long story short, going to respond to COVID-19 differently, which could possibly mean that it's going to help to create a different strain. So these strains that continue to keep mutating, we're making them stronger and stronger because we're not all on the same page. And so when someone talks about can you spread COVID or can you transmit COVID while being vaccinated, there are multiple factors that goes into that. So outside of us not talking about comparing apples and apples, we're also talking about the fact that people, if I go get vaccinated today and you don't go get vaccinated until next week, but maybe my body hasn't started to build an immune response, it doesn't mean that I can go out and party. So if I'm going out and I'm doing these things and I haven't built up that response just yet, then absolutely it would be possible to still be infected if my body has not had time to build up that response.
What if you've been vaccinated and you've been exposed to someone who has COVID? Should you self-quarantine? I mean, should you report? So, I mean, what should you do?
What the vaccination does is it stops clinically relevant, or it prevents or reduces your chances of clinically relevant COVID. So it means that should you encounter COVID, how it's been expressive, where people may have had a loss of taste and smell, where individuals might have had difficulty breathing, it minimizes the symptoms. And so the purpose of the vaccine is to actually neutralize some of the symptoms that would otherwise cause people to be hospitalized or seek medical care or to be severely ill.
Okay. Should you tell people? I mean, should you, if you are exposed to someone who has COVID, should you tell people you've encountered, or should you just go on about your business?
If you have been vaccinated, for one, the precautions. So I just want to back up a little bit. The precautions that you was taking before in terms of physically distancing from individuals, asking people if they are sick, and making sure that you're not around them if they are sick, this is something that has to become human nature to us, and it's not. So it doesn't mean that just because you go get the vaccine that if my nose start running or I start coughing again, then, oh, I'm going to go back to work and make everyone sick again, you know, like people were doing pre-COVID. So that's not what it means. It means that if you encounter someone that had COVID, that you feel safe and protected enough, and that if you do have it, you're less likely going to be able to spread it because you're not going to show the symptoms that you would otherwise show if you encounter COVID without the vaccine.
Okay, that's important to know because now that we're in this moment, Drs. Knight and Verholden, people now have a different set of questions. It's a different set of questions, but a lot of it does come back down, does come down to how can we avoid infection? What do we do once we've been infected? And now Dr. Fauci has weighed in. He has talked about different activities that he will and will not do, even though he's been vaccinated. Like he says, it's still a no for indoor restaurants. He's lived in the same neighborhood in Northwest Washington, D.C., according to this Business Insider report, for more than 40 years. But he said he hasn't gotten a day off in a year and 3 months. God bless him. He said that when he and his wife did gather with neighbors, they took no chances. They stayed socially distanced, physically distanced, and outdoors, even in the fall and winter when the weather got chilly. But he's only changed his behavior from this, you know, just when now we know that this is airborne, now we know this is highly infectious. He said, even though he's been fully vaccinated, and he's been vaccinated for a while, he still hasn't really changed his behavior. Is that what you would recommend?
Absolutely, because the one thing that we know for sure, so the vaccine is a part of the story, meaning that it is helping us to make sure that we're not overwhelmed in a hospital. Because I remember telling people, you know, it's over 330-something million people, but about 1 million hospital beds. And that's not just all for COVID. We're talking about individuals that might have heart disease, might have diabetes flare-up, all kinds of stuff. Accidents still happen. Pregnancies still happen. So we're talking about beds that need to be occupied for other things and that were prior to COVID were pretty much at about like 80 to 90% capacity. And so this helps, the vaccine helps to make sure that we're not having as many individuals go to the hospital overwhelming the healthcare system. But it is only a part of the story. And I have to remind people that right now, it was only as of February 29, 2020, that we got the first case of a COVID individual dying in the United States. It's only been about since last March that the first clinical trial started. And so I remind them that when we think about how long it's been, even since just December, of the vaccines really being rolled out and getting emergency use authorization, we are experiencing, again, as Dr. Deborah Verholden said, science on the live stage, meaning that as we go on right now, we're starting to learn how long the vaccine provides protection for. However, we know, too, that this may not necessarily be the end-all, be-all. So like Dr. Fauci said, if we become upon month 9 and we find that the antibodies are starting to diminish again and that we're right back at square one in terms of there being a fourth, fifth, or sixth wave, you want to stay ready so you don't have to get ready. And so individuals that may be relaxing their practices, not thinking about hand washing anymore, not thinking about cleaning surfaces, not thinking about physically distance from those that's sick or being conscious of where they're going, these likely are going to be the individuals that if they did not get it the first round, they'll get it the second round because they're not taking safety precautions, assuming that they think that the vaccine is a cure. The vaccine is not a cure. Vaccines have never been a cure. Vaccines are only to help us with preventing the symptomatic side of things or the infectious side of things.
Dr. Deborah Verholden, this is what you've been trying to convey for more than a year. I mean, indeed, Dr. Fauci says he will not go indoors where people are not wearing masks. What do you say to that? First you, Dr. Knighton, and then you, Dr. Deborah Verholden. I'd like to hear you both respond to that. Dr. Knighton?
So my first question that I have, and I do this anywhere I go, even to this day, is I am most concerned about the HVAC system. I'm concerned about the HVAC system because this is something that has not been taken into account. Early on in the pandemic, there were 9 people in a restaurant, and I can't even tell you the location off the top of my head, but long story short, all of them got COVID, and it was attached to the HVAC system, even though they were in a restaurant and they socially distanced away from each other. So for me, one of the main things that I want to know is the restaurant itself conscious about the air exchange? If they are not conscious about the air exchange, if it's in an old building, if the air is not circulating, if there is not proper ventilation, then absolutely, you will not catch me in locations like those. I actually had to switch my dental office because my dental office was located in one of those old medical buildings. And I said, I'm not getting on the elevator to go up to the sixth floor when it's so small, it's so closed in, and the elevator doesn't have ventilation on it. And I know that there's no one that's regularly monitoring to clean it. And so to his point, I'll be honest, I am very conscious about where it is I choose to eat.
Hmm. Dr. Deborah Verholden, what do you say? I mean, because you have another set of concerns because your baby's about to have a baby. And so it's not just about you. You've got, and you've had a daughter who's had it. And I only say this because you've been public and you've been very generous in sharing that. But you are dealing with real life stuff. Now, I mean, because you have people you absolutely have to protect, including an unborn child.
And the thing that people don't realize, and again, you know, I consider the vaccine a dose of hope because everybody wants some hope right now. So great, the vaccine is bringing something to the party. But people need to also remember, when we hear these numbers, it's 79% or 90% or 90% effective. Here's the way I want people to think about this. Let's say something, let's go with the original numbers we got for Pfizer, 95% effective. That's great news. What that also means is that for 5% of people, it fails. Everything goes exactly the way it's supposed to go. They do everything exactly as designed, and 5% of people will still get sick, right? Because it's not 100%. So knowing that, and the people that are in that 5%, and don't get me wrong, the people who actually contract the virus and have been vaccinated do much better than people who are unvaccinated, or we think than they would have done relative if they were not vaccinated. And I actually know people who've been reinfected and have been reinfected post-vaccination. So people need to remember that. This is not a perfect solution, but it is a real helping hand in the midst of this crisis. That's why the prevention stuff remains so important, because you can control that. That is in your hands.
How long does immunity last?
We don't know.
Okay.
So we don't know. We know that it works. So trial shows us that the vaccines work, but in terms of how long immunity lasts, that is still up for debate. We do know that our bodies provide some protection if you have encountered COVID like your antibodies do. I want to say they said it's what their it's the CD8 T cells. That still tends to elicit a response, like in our body, to help protect against COVID if you've already had COVID. Again, it is not a end all be all. And what Dr. Deborah Verholden said is so true. And I want to remind people that just because you take a high blood pressure med does not mean that your doctor is still not telling you about your diet. So if you're still eating a reckless diet, but you're on a blood pressure med, it's not going to work. If you're still eating a lot of sugar and you're on a diabetes medication, then guess what? It's not going to work. It just means that your body is going to have to work more harder. And so we have to look at this vaccine as being the same way, is that, no, it doesn't mean go out and be vaccinated and, oh, I don't have to do anything else. I'm free to go out and party and just be friendly and do whatever. No, that is the problem with us, is that early on it was washing hands, as I mentioned. Then washing hands got replaced with tests. Then tests got replaced with vaccines. And I'm just reminding people that as long as we continue to think that we can have a one-track mind or a one-track solution, we're going to continue to fail, because this is not going to be the last pathogen that we encounter, unfortunately.
Now, Barbara Jean said she was disinfecting her air conditioner last year, both inside and outside. Barbara Jean, I would love for you to call in at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. I'd like to know how you did that, and I'd like to know from you, Dr. Knighton, how one does that. I mean, most of us are not overhauling our HVAC system at home is like something that's not on the menu. What can we do to make sure, to ensure that we have clean air that we're breathing at home?
So I would definitely suggest reaching out to someone who is a HVAC specialist. Even outside of COVID, it's something good to do. When we're talking about allergens, we're also talking about bacteria that can be harbored in these systems, especially if you're living in an apartment complex and y'all are all sharing the same air system. Mm. It is essential that you are advocating for this to be done, because you can be at risk for more reasons than just COVID. So it is essential. I also tell individuals, too, just because something says disinfectant on a can does not mean it is safe for your nostrils, does not mean it's safe for inhalation. And so I'm seeing a lot of individuals that's spraying stuff crazy, but they have to remember that that is the same stuff that you are putting inside of your bodies. And so you have to remember that it is important to use products when disinfecting that are EPA approved, but also say that they're not going to cause some sort of respiratory irritation. Because you're going to be walking around here coughing and sneezing, and people are going to think you got COVID anyway, or you're going to think you got COVID trying to prevent COVID.
I'm sorry, because you know you can't sneeze now. You can't cough. You mean people jump. They jump. I mean, that is terrible. It's terrible because I have my allergies kick up at this time of year. And oh, my gosh, you know, I've almost explode when I'm trying to suppress the cough or sneeze. It's terrible. I mean, it's terrible.
Celebrity is, you want attention on you, just cough or sneeze.
No, I don't want that. I don't want that. I mean, but let me see. Dawn said, now, what do you suggest for senior citizens in high rises? Because, you know, a lot of these senior citizen mm-hmm. homes are high rises, and they cannot open the windows. I mean, they don't have terraces. I mean, they're almost like hermetically sealed in these buildings. What do you recommend?
So I still would be asking them, or if they can't do it themselves, I would be having someone advocate for them to make sure that the HVAC system is clean. Unfortunately, because they are in a situation of where they are in high rise, if they have to travel, let's say downstairs or in between floors, making sure that they are cleaning their hands after touching the button and anything that they may encounter. And also, too, I tell anyone, like, let's say they are a senior and they are living with younger individuals or someone that may have been infected. This is the time. Air purifiers do not work necessarily for the person that is being infected. I mean, they don't work for people that are not being infected. They work for the person that's being infected. So if you were to put an air purifier in the room with the person that has encountered the virus, mm-hmm. then that'll keep that air in and it'll purify the air around that person, but it does not mean that it's going to protect the whole space.
So what do you do if you live in one of these buildings? I mean, what can you do? Is there anything you should put up by your vents, or what should you do?
I mean, to be honest with you, there hasn't been any recommendations, and it's sad, but and not even a lot of studies. To be honest, but I know mm-hmm. individuals that do stay in high rises that did have outbreaks, and they actually had, you know, CDC representatives come out early on in a pandemic because it was so centralized in these locations that they came and they actually did testing on site at the apartment building.
Dr. Deborah Verholten, to me, this is a public health issue, something that no one is really talking about, something that you all just brought to fore today. People who live in buildings or who share vents, you know, I mean, you can do that in townhouses and things like that. People who live in these complexes, well, we are really living upon each other. What do you think we can do? Is there anything that you would recommend? Because you also work with our legislators, with the people who run our cities and who run our governments. What should we do?
You know, that's immediately where my mind went to. These are things that need to be regulated. And if we weren't regulating them before, boy, we realize there's a need to do it now. You know, we had to, when our governor's executive powers to keep us in a state of emergency and keep the stay-at-home order in place was ended by our legislature. And I'm not blaming anyone. She had a legal authority to do that. for 60 days, and then she could extend it another 60 days after that. It required legislative approval, and they simply weren't willing to give it. And so what we had to do was then look at all of the other systems that we could tap into to keep people safe and protected. And one of the first places we went to is called MyOSHA, Michigan Office of Occupational Safety and Hazards. Mm-hmm. Why? Because they can regulate workspaces. You know, we have housing departments federally and states. We've got a lot of the sort of institutional, governmental pieces in place. The question is, how do we use and activate those offices to make sure that people are protected and that their needs are met? Because here's the reality. This issue around air handling and air circulation and all of that, especially in public housing, has probably COVID, as Sister Tisha says, COVID is the snitch. This is not a new problem. COVID just told on the problem real loud and proud and put it out on Front Street. So I think we've got to deal with these things. And I always say, what can we legislate? You know, we need laws, and then those laws need real teeth to them, i.e. enforcement. Because goodwill ain't enough. People won't do it just because it's the right thing to do. Nine times out of ten, that's not how things work. Yeah. So we need goodwill. We actually don't need goodwill. If we had laws with enforcement, even if we had bad will and people didn't want to do it, laws that are enforced, people would do it. So I think that's where we need to start to look.
Well, you know, I think Dr. Knighton, I want you to weigh in on that, because I just don't think that we have a culture of life here. You know, we look at life in utero, but we don't look at life, you know, we love zygotes and embryos and fetuses, but not babies, not so much, right? People, not so much. And, you know, as they're pushing up against President Biden, increasing the military budget. And I only mention that because we're always told there's not enough money. But then when you talk about infrastructure, that is what you need. I mean, a lot of Americans live in apartment buildings or in these multifamily dwellings. I'm thinking about people who don't live alone and things like that. And most of America's infrastructure is quite old.
Yeah.
What should we do?
So for one, I think the issue is we have a reactive system instead of a proactive system. And just as you mentioned, in terms of allocation of resources and legislation, that's honestly where we need to be. Because even when we're thinking about, let's say, like the high-rise situation, when I tell you I've had unethical things told to me just in terms of, like, there being someone infected in the building and a property manager is not even telling the residents so that way they could actually be able to be safe. Then I also think about legislation. And like you said, we got all of this money going towards guns and wars. But yet and still, there wasn't enough money to make sure that people had adequate funding to have time off of work to be vaccinated. We didn't make sure that individuals that were caregivers to other people, that they had some bereavement days while having to deal with this. I mean, it's just been a lot, and I feel like there could have been more money allocated to taking care of people. And that, to me, is very disappointing when I do feel like we are putting individuals to the back burner. But it's more of a reason that even still, if we disagree with the directions that leadership is going, we have to remember the things that we are in control of for ourselves and for the ones that we love. And unfortunately, and I ain't gonna even say unfortunately, but this is why advocacy is so important. This is why it's important for us to make sure that for those individuals that can't speak up for themselves, that we're speaking up for them. Because even when it comes to the high rise, I couldn't do anything about the high rise, but I made sure that I produced educational materials, and I was dropping them off on the apartment doorstep. And I'm sure those apartment complexes wasn't happy, but it specifically said in there, ask your building manager about the HVAC system. The HVAC system can do X, Y, and Z. So I spelled it out what it is they needed to do just so that way they can understand how to keep themselves safe. So
and you know,
I think legislation is the key.
And we need to create subsidies for that, for people, period. Yes. Period, period, period. Just change it all, everybody. Nicole Hernandez says, laws only help when people help the people when they are enforced. You are absolutely right. And yes. Medi said, attorney Maria Rodriguez said, look, hey, we need some legislation here. Absolutely. But we need to have get our mind together. We need to, first of all, know what the ask ought to be. Air quality ought to be a really big issue. Dr. Shanina Knighton from Case Western Reserve University, infection prevention specialist, and Dr. Deborah Verholden, Associate Dean of Public Health at Michigan State University. God bless you both. Have a great weekend. At the top of the hour, we're going to be talking about George Floyd with people from Minneapolis. What's going on up there? Back with more of the Santita Jackson Show in just a few minutes.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. It's Friday, April 9th, 2021. I'm Santita Jackson. This is WCPT 820, the nation's largest progressive talk radio station based here in Chicago, but reaching you all over the country and all over the world. If you don't believe it, go meet my morning stars on the Santita Jackson and Friends page on Facebook and on the Santita Jackson Show channel on YouTube. Please go over there and like and subscribe. And, of course, AM 950 Radio, Minneapolis, St. Paul, doing morning drive up there. We're getting ready for our big ball in a couple of weeks. I think in another week or so. So I'm going to be talking about that next week on the Santita Jackson Show. That is a Voice of Progressive Minnesota. Call me or text me at 773-763-WCPT, 773-763-9278. If you want to send me a text, you thank GWC Injury Lawyers for that. Everybody, let's get to a few of these headlines as we talk about the latest in the Derek Chauvin case. That's right. Chicago, we're going to have a high of 64 degrees, partly cloudy. Minneapolis, St. Paul, a high of 53 degrees. Rain, rain, rain. And I don't mean purple, everybody. It's already raining here in Chicago. The Dow closed up 57 points yesterday. The NASDAQ closed up 140 points. The S&P 500 closed up 17 points. And we had quite the day in Major League Baseball. The Twins, wow, they really pounded down on those Seattle Mariners, 10-2. The Cubs, Chicago, 4-2 over the Pirates. The White Sox shut out the Kansas City Royals. Yes, 6-0, everybody. Prince Philip, God rest his soul, at the age of 99, has made his transition. He and Queen Elizabeth were married in 1947, 99 years of age. The Windsor Castle just announced that he had made his transition. Of course, in recent weeks, he's been hospitalized while undergoing treatment for an infection and recovering after heart surgery. Prince Philip made his transition at the age of 99. George Floyd died of low levels of oxygen, according to a medical report from a medical expert yesterday. We're going to hear more about that, even though Derek Chauvin, it was found, kept his knee on his neck a majority of the time. The pressure of Derek Chauvin's knees on George Floyd's neck and back made it virtually impossible for the handcuffed man to breathe as he was pinned face down on a street, according to Dr. Michael Tobin, a Chicago area pulmonologist and critical care doctor who specializes in the science of breathing, everybody. The science of breathing. He testified yesterday that the pressure of Chauvin jamming his knees, grinding them, if you saw the video, into Floyd's body cut off his oxygen and led to brain damage, he said, within minutes, sparking an arrhythmia that caused his heart to stop. We're going to be talking about more of that in just a few minutes on the Santita Jackson Show. In the meantime, we are in the throes of the 2020 election season, and guess what, everybody? The Republicans are at it. Ooh, Texas GOP official in a video is seeking an army of 10,000 volunteers for Houston alone, everybody. In a leaked video, according to this Washington Post report, of a recent presentation, this man who identified himself as a GOP official in Harris County, Texas, the fourth most populous county in the United States. Indeed, Harris County houses Houston, which is about to overtake Chicago as the third largest city in the country. Well, guess what? He said that the party needs 10,000 Republicans in that county alone for, quote, an election integrity brigade in Houston. Now, he looked at a map and he pointed to Houston's dense, racially diverse urban core. He said, now, we need the volunteers to, quote, go there with, quote, the confidence and courage to come down there where the fraud is occurring. Of course, those are black and brown neighborhoods, everybody. 2020, 2022, everybody, it is on. Hospitals are seeing more young adults with severe COVID symptoms, according to the CDC. Indeed, they're saying that the rise of coronavirus variants will deeply affect and define the next phase of the pandemic of the United States. Indeed, now we're seeing more and more issues with these vaccines, but the vaccine rollout continues. 13 people at a COVID-19 vaccination site in Colorado had adverse reactions to the J&J vaccine on Wednesday, and therefore they shut down the operations for the day. It will be reopened shortly. A Venezuelan mayor marked the homes of COVID patients with a red symbol. Now, this is his effort to stop people from breaking quarantine. Wow. And now something very interesting from the European Court of Human Rights. They ruled yesterday that obligatory vaccinations, that is mandatory vaccinations, can be seen as necessary in democratic societies. Now, this is a landmark judgment in response to a lawsuit brought by Czech families who were suing over compulsory jabs for children. Well, everybody, something great is going to happen. Let's end these headlines on some good news. Welcome to America, the new album by Prince, will debut on 60 Minutes on Sunday. Amen to that. Let's get to it, everybody. What's going on in this? Oh, with the trial of Derek Chauvin, many people are saying that, you know, the person who's really on trial here is George Floyd. It seems like that. But I came across a couple of something in the Washington Post that struck me. And this is what they wrote. Margaret Sullivan, who's a columnist there, said, in an appalling bit of shorthand, the riveting courtroom drama in Minneapolis has come to be called the George Floyd trial. Floyd died in police custody last spring and is obviously not the one on trial. It was a Minneapolis police officer, Derek Chauvin, who knelt on his neck for more than 9 unrelenting minutes, who now faces second and third degree murder and second degree manslaughter charges. But some in right-wing media keep doing their utmost, she writes, to make this tragedy about George Floyd's drug use and troubled life and what seems like an attempt to absolve Chauvin long before the jury reaches a verdict. In effect, they are putting George Floyd on trial. And then last year, just after George Floyd was killed, there was a tremendous article that I've posted on my page as well, Born with Two Strikes, How Systemic Racism Shaped Floyd's Life and Hobbled His Ambition. I urge you to read it because this was a young man who wanted to change the world. I don't think he knew how he was going to do it. He has absolutely done that, of course. Joining Dwight McKee, noted social scientist, also known as Dr. D here on the Santita Jackson Show, and Jonathan Jackson, the national spokesman for Rainbow Push, known as the professor, dubbed by the king of talk radio, of course, the great Cliff Kelly. Joining him is, you know, someone who has really been a spiritual leader in Minneapolis and really in the world of our church for decades. This great man of God is the pastor of the New Salem Missionary Baptist Church, but he's an advocate for his flock, for all people, Reverend Jerry McAfee. We welcome you back to the show. Welcome you all. Welcome to the Santita Jackson Show. Oh, Reverend McAfee, no, thank you. Help me. It seems that we know about what was happening in George Floyd's body, but we don't know what happened. We don't even know if Derek Chauvin was on anything. George Floyd is on trial. Does the Minneapolis black community, does the Minneapolis community of goodwill, do they feel like they're being tried today?
Well, I think it might be in a state of confusion in that whenever there's a problem with our oxygen flow, because if I was to look at what transpired yesterday from the doctor, Chauvin kneeled on that man's neck still 3 minutes after he was dead. Mm-hmm. And they've been kneeling on our necks in Minneapolis for so long that it's kind of hard to always focus on one area because we're hurt in so many different areas. As I shared with you on yesterday, certainly there is a concern about the trial because we've gone through it so many times, and they've never found anybody guilty other than the Somalian brother who killed the white girl. That I think they're just in a state of just kind of wait and see. Some are saying, you know, they gonna get off, and it would not surprise any of us if he got off because it's been just that egregious there for so long.
Explain that. I mean, what are we missing about Minneapolis and the rest of the country?
Well, if you look at USA Today, if you look at the Washington Post and many others, we're either number two or number four worst places for blacks to live in. Yep.
What does that mean?
From housing to education to employment, the whole nine, poverty, period. We're one of the worst categories in every category for the African-American to live in.
Do you think that's why that gentleman followed George Floyd when he saw him being escorted by the police? He said, "I was just being nosy." I said, "No, he felt something. There's something in the water there, if you will, Reverend McAfee."
Definitely, definitely, you get that because of the level of mistrust that's been there. I'm telling you, girl. I can't think of a city. A partner of mine lives in, I think it's Maplewood. And I can't tell you how many times he gets stopped to this day. So it's not, as he calls it, it's not Minnesota nice. It's Minnesota ice.
Wow.
If it's nice, we have not been experiencing it. Now, here's what will happen. They will allow some black folk through the door. You know the game. Mm-hmm. To make it look like things are going that well. But on the ground, it ain't going that well. Not at all.
So were you surprised that the police chief testified for the prosecution in this? Well, the prosecution,
oh, no,
the police.
No.
Why not?
See, one, he's a friend. Two, he had to sue the police department to get where he's at. Girl, let me tell you something. Hear me. The chief of police was in a lawsuit with several other black officers about the racism that they felt and that they experienced in the police department. One of the brothers who should have been the chief before this was the chief was a brother by the name of Lee Edwards. Had all of the credentials, everything there, but that level of racism won't allow it to happen. So when Rondo, we get a weekly report from Rondo. That's why when the younger folk was talking about defunding the police, we were saying, no, not now. Hell, you just finally got a police chief that's going to be sensitive to our needs. He was born and raised in South Minneapolis. So we got a long history with him and getting stuff done. If you remember, he fired them three guys the same day at the black community's request. It had never happened. So now you got a guy. What you saw on that TV screen, mm-hmm. That's Rondo. That's who he's been. That whole class of police officers, because our mindset was this. They're going to have the police. So we got to try to get some police officers that will have a heart for the community. And so the class of officers that he was in, we still got maybe 5-10 more of the brothers and sisters left. He's the real deal. That's who you want as a police chief. He's at the table for mediation that the past mayor got rid of because it was so bad. We were ordered to have federal mediation, right? Mm-hmm. And so after 5 years of going through everything with every disenfranchised community you can name, they came up with 130 things that needed to be worked on between the community and the police. Well, the old mayor, R.T. Ryback, for whatever reason, he took them away from the mediation table, the police and everybody. Now, at that time, my position was, and still is to this day, that they should have been placed in receivership, which would break the power of the union. Because, as you know, you can have a good police chief, but if you got a crazy union, which we do, supporting all that foolishness. And so Rondo has brought the police department back to the mediation table because they know they're under the gun. So that brother's the real deal.
Jonathan, you've been fighting the police here in Chicago with the Burge case. Why don't you go into that and connect it to what you just heard Reverend McAfee say?
Love your work, Reverend McAfee. And Santita, I want to be very careful to carefully say fighting corruption in our policing, that I don't want to step on the line of being broad in our assertion. I respect the police. We have great officers. And I respect you, Reverend McAfee. If someone's breaking into my house, I'm calling the police and not you, Reverend McAfee. So we all need police. Okay? Yes. Let us be clear. I want you coming here with alarms, guns, everything. Save me. So we respect the police. But we're talking about this culture of not testifying, but test the line. And what we're seeing for the first time in Minnesota, which can be the way forward for the nation, is we're saying leadership matters. You've got other officers are feeling that they can come forward and tell the truth. Other toxicologists, other medical professionals can come forward and tell the truth because the chief of police is telling the truth. He fired those officers from what he saw was a murder, in his opinion, 4 days later. That cannot happen in Chicago. It's against the union rules in Chicago. So there are all these different pockets. These officers are protected. When someone is killed, like Laquan McDonald, first he goes to a wham-sham committee called internal investigation. It goes into a COPA, accountability police organization. There's no timeline on the person, the reports to come from there. Then the superintendent can say he saw the video. Then the mayor can say they have or haven't seen the video. Then the superintendent can say, I choose to fire this officer, which is a recommendation. Then it goes before the police board, and they can overturn the superintendent of police. Our superintendent of police cannot fire those officers in Chicago for comparable murders here, and they can hold the videotapes and not release them. That's how we end up with a child that was shot 16 times, and video was held, and a settlement was paid / bribery before there was even a trial. And then the parents were told they cannot talk about it. That's bribery. That's corruption in high places. So, Santita, we are all for judicial reform. There is a man I saw in North Carolina who just got out of jail after 44 years that was innocent, and his compensation is capped at $750,000. He can only do like $15,000 a year for 50 years. So the other 31 years, I guess, is on the house. You know, the other 29 years of his life is just for the car. I mean, it's slavery by like another name. So Minnesota is leading the way and showing us what leadership matters for the good and having a police officer. And what we also need to show is that now these police unions, all these men that show bravado, they want to attack teachers' union. They want to attack custodial unions. They don't want to confront the police unions in any major city. This has to be the next focus. And Zatita, I would also caution that what's on trial right now is not policing across America. That's in the wings. What's on trial is Derek Chauvin. And I do hope the prosecution goes in to show that he had a pre-existing relationship with George Floyd. When he showed up, he knew George Floyd. So there was something about a personal relationship between he and George Floyd that made him kill that man.
Reverend McAfee, it seemed that Jonathan, Reverend McAfee, it seemed very personal. I mean, the owner of the club where they both worked, Chauvin on the outside, Floyd on the inside, the owner of the club said that Chauvin was very aggressive. I mean, are we going to hear anything about that?
Well, I would hope so. Again, this dude had over 26 different things against him. And that's why Jonathan is so on point, that the problem, one, is the union up there. It's called internal affairs. How does somebody have 20-some different charges against them, and none of them, not one, is substantiated? Everything that was designed that was supposed to protect us from those atrocities failed us as a people, from internal affairs to the so-called police civilian review, who never found anything against the police. And so this dude probably had so much pride, he thought he'd get off. You know, it's no issue. It's a non-person down there.
Well, because he lied to his supervisor initially. Dwight McKee went out with, I think, Mike Knighton and at least one other person on the right after they killed Mark Clark and Fred Hampton. And they went looking for Bobby Rush, who's now our congressman, because the FBI were going to kill him. So Dwight, they jumped in the car looking for him. Dwight, what do you see with this case?
Well, I think Johnny and Brother McAfee hit it right on the head. You really see more of the same. Well, the difference is that politically you see more of the same, but you also actually see the event. And that's the dynamic that changes everything, is that, that before you were dealing with policemen's word, and they were creating situations as they interpret them. Now you got, they're competing with a videotape and a video camera that is not as manipulable. And you're seeing these actual events, and you know that there is something rotten in Denmark on all of these situations. So now what you're trying to do, what the police are trying to do, is actually prove that what you were looking at is not what you saw, is that there are other mitigating situations involved that are kind of above our capacity to understand but trust these mitigating situations, because we really understood them. We understand if these police were justified. When you talk about this police culture, and John is one of the best I know at understanding it, is you're talking about more than individuals with jobs whose job it is to serve and protect. You're talking about these ethnic groups who came to America within the last 200 years who were looking for a way in. And so each one of these ethnic groups found a professional situation that they could come in as a group, and that will become their access to and part of the American experience. They will become their piece of the rock. For the police, many of them, particularly in Chicago, they're ethnic groups like the Irish, who this is a generational occupation. They are the third and fourth, and some the fifth generation of Irish, who the whole ethnic group and the families make their living by serving on the police force. And so not only are they protecting a citizen, but what they're protecting is a way of life.
Stay right there, Dwight. Stay right there. Stay right there. This is their route into the middle class, getting out from underneath. Talking with Reverend Jerry McAfee, the pastor of the New Salem Missionary Baptist Church in Minneapolis. You don't want to miss this great conversation with Dwight McKee and Jonathan Jackson. Yes, that Jonathan Jackson from Rainbow, the national spokesman, and of course, the dean, Dr. D, Dwight McKee, as we talk about Derek Chauvin. He's the one who's supposed to be on trial. Isn't he? Santita Jackson Show, back in just a few minutes.
This is the Santita Jackson Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Santita Jackson Show, WCPT 820 at Chicago, AM 950 Radio. The voice of progressive Minnesota. Wow. We keep thinking that Minnesota, Lake Minnetonka, the First Avenue Club, Purple Rain. Well, you know, Prince knew something, because his new album that will be dropped on 60 Minutes on Sunday is entitled Welcome to America. That is his gift to us 5 years after his passing. Wow, wow. Reverend Jerry McAfee, pastor of the New Salem Missionary Baptist Church in Minneapolis, and Dwight McKee, the dean right here, and the professor Jonathan Jackson from Rainbow Push, the national spokesman. Boy, oh boy, we've been having a good time. Pastor McAfee, I've been trying to make sense of your police commissioner, because I said, you know, I'm wondering what his politics are, and I wanted to hear from you to find out what they were, because I was surprised to see these police officers who felt free enough to come and testify. I said, well, maybe it's because the prosecution works with the police, but they kept saying, no, this is not what we do, or this is not what we're supposed to do. Were you surprised as you watched officer after officer come on?
Not at all. Again, most of those guys I've worked with, from Lieutenant Zimmerman, who we call Z-Man. Mm-hmm. Again, what we have to deal with crime in our communities. And that's one of my issues sometimes with us, that we're not always real. And mm-hmm. so if you got to deal with crime, you want to get officers, you know, who can be sensitive to everything, but yet enforce the law. Mm-hmm. Well, you got Z-Man, you the Charlie Adams, you got Chucky McCree, you got Chief Arredondo, and just a host of others. Now, here's what's interesting. We had a police chief some years ago, McManus, I think he's in San Antonio now, who was making the necessary changes, and the city council and the mayor and them got rid of him.
Mm.
And that, and order to exact change, you got to have people in the system, from the mayor, the city council, and a good chief. And we finally are at a point in place where we can do some of that. But you do know that the city council right now is trying to restrict the mayor as well as the chief's powers and get him to answer to some neophytes on the city council who don't even articulate the values of the community. When I tell you we're in trouble, we're in trouble. I don't, after Rondo's interview, I don't expect him to be in Minneapolis long.
Really?
There's too many other cities who's looking for a conscientious police chief.
Wow. Is there anyone, I mean, what a loss. Has he been able to make any changes in the culture at the department?
Oh, God, yeah. And that's what I was saying. The fight right now to defund the police up there is a crazy fight because he's made the changes. When I tell you we have a, look, girl, we've got Harrington is the head of the Department of Public Safety. He's the commissioner. Booker, who's from the community, is assistant. Hutch is the head of the county, Hennepin County. You got Eddie Frizzell, who is the head of Metro Transit. You got all these brothers now. In these, we meet almost twice a week, them in the community, bringing us different reports, what need to be done, the whole nine. We actually working together for the first time that I can remember in 30 years.
So when people are talking about defunding the police, are you able to talk with those activists who are pushing for that to let them know, no, not this is what we're trying to move toward? Are they hearing
you? There's not too much money behind it. No, they're not trying to hear it. They're not trying to hear it at all. Because to me, it's a gimmick. As I shared with you on yesterday, since George Floyd died, we had 63 homicides. We had 500 and some people shooting. So the black community was saying, what y'all talking about trying to defund the police now for? When we're vulnerable like this, you should have saw what they call George Floyd Square and everything else, even weeks or two after George Floyd had died. And again, I grew up, I fight the police, but I'm also going to tell the truth. We've created such a lawless mindset that they shooting people like 94 going east and west, robbing, stealing cars, you name it. And Jonathan, as you so articulately put it, if somebody breaking into your house, you want to call the police. And that's what they do. Philippe Cunningham, one of the number one guys who was a guest, who's talking about defunding the police, he had hired a private security firm to protect him. But you don't want our people protected. So when they ransack the stores and everything, I'm telling you, it's crazy.
Why are you giggling, Jonathan and Dwight? Hello?
We're McAfee. One thing happened here last summer when the rioting started happening and there was some looting is they pulled up the bridges in downtown separating the north side from the south side. And there was a group of liberals, if you will, that came from the north side into Inglewood, a black neighborhood. And mind you, from Streeterville, where the bridges went up, Northwestern University downtown, lakefront.
Gold Coast.
Life expectancy between Streeterville and Inglewood is a 30-year difference. Largest life expectancy gap in the nation. 90 years on average there, 60 years in Inglewood. And these young children, I would say good-hearted, came to Inglewood, mostly white, talking about defund the police. Well, some of the gang leaders and other community people in Inglewood stood with the police and told them to go back home, go back over the bridge, because we need policing over here. We need the help. So, outside high-minded ideas. And this is one of the issues in Minnesota. Minnesota's a beautiful city, great mall of America, largest in the nation, highest income, one of the highest income states in the nation, $83,000 compared to $36,000 for the black community. The black community makes on average less than half of the income of the white community. Black ownership is of the lowest rate compared to whites in the nation at one-third the rate. You can only save if you earn, and African-Americans aren't able to earn. So there's a liberal side of Minnesota from Hubert Humphrey and other senators to our underbelly that's as racist and caustic. And we have to remind people the Mississippi River starts in Minnesota. And so Mississippi and Minnesota have a lot more in common. And long from the past of looking at all the issues of Mississippi, we now have to take our attention to the new Jim Crow in Minnesota, in Wisconsin, in Michigan. Here's where the militia and all these people are, and this is where the battle lines are drawn. And to that degree, Reverend McAfee, you're on the forefront, and you speak the truth, and God bless you.
You are on the forefront. I mean, what about this? What do you hear? I mean, what about this putting George Floyd on trial? I mean, what do you make of that?
It was to be expected, because that's what they have done. Every time somebody gets shot by the police, the first thing they do is do a character analysis or show the record of the victim. What they don't do is show what happens with the officer. What was their past life like? So again, we expected this. It's nothing new. It's a common practice.
Where is this? Is there any, does anyone know Officer Chauvin, former Officer Chauvin? Does anyone know him? Did he have a reputation in Minneapolis? I mean, I know about, if you could go into the times that he was charged with misbehaving as a police officer. I know at least six times he choked people, and he was never disciplined for that.
No. Well, again, we only know him by his record. I didn't even ask some of my partners on the force, you know, if they knew him. But like I told you, you got to remember, the chief that you saw is part of the group that sued the Minneapolis Police Department for the racism that they've had to deal with and exists in the department.
Wow. You know, I mean, Jonathan?
I would add to that, police names are covered and sealed. I can understand why they deserve a level of protection. But their backgrounds and everything is made private. You know, their residence and so forth should. But their character is also hidden in there. And so, this guy, you should be able to open up his Facebook page. You saw the Capitol riots. And then when they started opening up the Facebook page and the postings, you saw how many ex-military officials and how many law enforcement officials were involved in so many racist groups. Chauvin, just like any other racist, they don't move alone. They are like grapes. They go in bunches. So anybody connected to his Facebook page, I'm telling you, would have the same affiliation. They're part of other countercultures, subgroups. Why don't they open up the Facebook page and see who's socially connected to him?
You know, and Reverend McAfee and Dwight McKee, I want you to weigh in here, too. Reverend McAfee, I think that in the aftermath, just going forward, when you have issues like this, I think you need to do a toxicology report. We need to find out if the police officer or officers were on any drugs.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
It's just like we put, because it is documented that police officers, they bring a lot of their problems home, or maybe they bring a lot of their problems onto the force with them, but they have a high incidence of domestic violence. Many of them have drug problems. I mean, there's a lot going on. People have problems. Yes, Jonathan.
Nantita, when you look at this man, you could tell he was having an out-of-body experience. He was soulless. Okay? They're talking about the Negro, the beast. This man is a beast. He sat there with no soul in him for 9 minutes. I'm talking about greater than the length of a Super Bowl halftime show, strangling the life out of someone, being videoed like he was game hunting. I mean, like, what is up with the screening of how did he even get on the force? And there's a long history there, and he should be the one that's being examined. The last thing I would tell you about Officer Chauvin, this is a pattern, and his pattern is not being put on trial, which is a problem for me. And I'm afraid that even when they say there's a $27 million settlement, don't prejudice the jury. Some people, all you need is one person in a criminal trial to sow doubt, to say, well, George got enough. I mean, it's wrong. It's corrupted. How can you settle before you pursue justice? I know it's civil. No. You shouldn't even be able to discuss civil until you finish the criminal. The state of Minnesota is not guilty. Derek Chauvin is guilty. The state of Minnesota and Minneapolis is guilty of having a racist system, but Chauvin is the murderer, and I hope they bring that point home.
Well, what impact did the $27 million settlement have? Or has it had one, Reverend McAfee? Oh, Jonathan?
If you've ever had to go on, like, trial and you put your sandwich in a plastic Ziploc bag and put it in a brown paper bag and you take it and you got to tell your boss you can't go to work and you're taking the bus there or concerned about where you're paying for parking to go to the court and you can't talk to family members and you're don't know if this is going to go on a day, a week, a month, and you might have been reduced in your pay. You're angry sitting up on trial sometimes because you can't afford it. And then you hear about this person that might have been working, might not have been working, that had whatever level of education. People have prejudice and animosity. Like, wow, he made more money than me. Man, that must be nice. Just think of the attitude that people have. It's wrong to do that. And, it prejudices juries. Some people say
most definite. And you also most definite. Always deal with that, the fact that the police themselves don't have to pay. The union don't pay. The individual police don't pay. The city pays. And so there is no consequences for the police department. I'm a firm believer that with all these suits, we spent $500 million in suits. I think that half of that should have come from the police unions themselves. They should have some liability in having to pay for the victims that they jeopardize and violate. But if you have no liability, then you feel like you got the freedom to do whatever you want to do and get a paid vacation on the way.
And the citizens pay for it.
Reverend
Hatch talks about in Chicago that 80% of the police all live in about 5 districts because they are all Irish. They've been there for 4 generations. This is their annuity, and the politicians who are in charge, the mayor has been Irish for the last 50 years, and so when they negotiate the contract, it's like the wolf negotiating the contract over the sheep. If they negotiate the contract in their own behalf with co-signed by the politicians who then they take part of their pension plans and invest in the campaigns, political campaigns of the dailies. And so you got inherent in this a whole culture whose whole lives are dependent on them owning that part of the city and controlling that part of the city, and we become the victims of that. They don't accidentally call these paddy wagons. They call them paddy wagons because the Irish have been in charge of this for 200 years.
Reverend McAfee? This is a lot to take in, but heaven knows it's the truth. Reverend McAfee, $27 million. Where is that coming from? The money that's going to the Floyd family.
They have a special fund that some of it is going to come from, as well as insurance.
which I my opinion has been for a while, the police, just like we have to have car insurance, that the police ought to have their own liability insurance. Hmm. And yet, and then make it mandatory for them to have it in order to work. And that way, if they get 26 charges like Chauvin, just like if you get into 26 accidents in your car, they're going to cancel your insurance before you get to 26. Hmm. Then you can fire the police, because up there, it's hard to fire a police officer. It's all get out. So that money is going to come from the very people who are taxed. And then who many times are mistreated by the system, we're going to wind up having to pay for that some kind of way.
Are people looking down the road past this trial, past this verdict, or are people just waiting to see what is going to happen?
Waiting.
And really waiting for the defense to put on their their case, because I believe they're going to put on a case. And I worry that they're going to savage George Floyd, Pastor.
Well, I know they're going to do that to George Floyd. There's no question in my mind. The question I would have is what level and intensity of the violence that may occur. I'm under no illusions that one, it's some people that's there, and I'm sure some people are going to be coming in. That's what I'm thinking about, because I think it's going to go down even if they find him guilty. Because the other three guys who are going to be tried, they ain't going to find all of them guilty. I can tell you that now.
How would people react to that? I mean, because they sat on him, too.
Well, but you had the one dude who was telling Chauvin, you know, shouldn't we turn him over?
Yes.
So you had that. Then you got the one Hmong fella who was out front. You know, he didn't have a knee on him at all. But, you know, they would have made us complicit in that. But they operate on the a different justice system than us. So I'm just waiting to see what we need to do to try to preserve our community so they don't come in and burn the grocery store down again or tear it up in the pharmacy.
What can be done?
Just to be real.
to that end, what can you do to try and kind of keep the peace?
Some of us that's locked and loaded to do what we need to do. You ain't going to burn the grocery store down. You ain't going to try to pharmacy up no more. Our people ain't going through that. Now you better go in some other area and do it. Hmm. That's what we're going to do. Now they can take it any way they want.
Did you find that, were these people, with the people who did the burning and the looting, were they people from Minneapolis, or were they people who were not from Minneapolis?
Some was from the suburbs. Many of them folk that they arrested was from the suburbs. That's why it was interesting when Jonathan was talking about the event that happened downtown when the young folk come down. They're talking about get rid of the police. If you look at them marches, after that second or third time, you ain't seen no whole bunch of black folk there. Black folk went back and start dealing with their day-to-day business of trying to survive. And not that they were indifferent, but they're trying to survive. So, I mean, rent is extraordinarily high there, trying to make it. COVID is still there. And so, again, when you watch those marches, just look real close and see who's in that crowd. I know when we were protecting the last grocery store, two of the Boogaloo boys that they finally arrested came down there. And so we had already said, number one, these all black folk, we out here guarding this thing. So when two or three white folk want to come join us, something ain't right. So we got people on them. Now, they was armed, but we was armed as well. We had the same guns they had, no different. So when they looked at it, they're like, this ain't going to be easy. We had folk on the roof. The whole nine, you was going to catch it. And so later on, because we took the pictures, the whole nine, because, again, you don't know them. And so I think a couple months ago, they arrested them. So one of my partners said, hey, man, look at the news. Them was them two guys who was down there with us. So you had all of these mindsets in the city. And South Minneapolis, in South Minneapolis, St. Paul, and North. The pharmacies was tore up. The grocery stores was tore up. The things that our people need to survive was decimated.
Hmm. Well, Dwight, your response. We only have a few more minutes left in the segment. Dwight, in about a minute, what would you like to say?
I want Johnny to close it out. Johnny's been on this issue for 30 years, and he knows as much as anybody knows on it. So I want to give my time to him.
Well, Jonathan first, yeah. You, and then Reverend McAfee.
You know, be careful for the overlay and the underplay. There's something subterfuge going on. Black folks aren't running around at night with hoods on, burning up police stations. Those are brand new police stations, Santita.
That is not how we do that, Jonathan.
No, when I saw, listen, I've seen riots in a dozen cities. I've never seen the Popeyes and the McDonald's burn down. When somebody has this trained in some chemicals that was able to burn, and Santita, you've got to get this temperature up to over 2,000 degrees in order to melt the steel. So someone has access to some chemicals. The level of damage that was done in Minnesota is not some stuff you can pick up at the local Home Depot or Lowe's. So there are some people that may have some military background and other things like what we saw in the Capitol riot. So let's be prayerful and mindful, but we're not destroying our own community. So whites look like, why are black folks destroying their own community? We're not destroying our own community. Okay,
our communities are being destroyed.
In here, infiltrating and destroying.
Reverend McAfee, what say you? Well, the last 2 minutes belong to you.
Well, we certainly solicit everybody's prayers without a doubt in dealing with that which is internal as well as external. I know this much. North Minneapolis will be ready, period. And I'm not talking about the police. We will be ready for anything that go down. Our prayers is that, you know, folk don't try to bob our stuff. Because, Jonathan, you're absolutely right. We've seen it, without a doubt. And we'll be looking even more with a keener eye now and be prepared. The minute they start saying that verdict getting ready to come out, we'll have our people stationed and ready to do whatever needs to be done to make sure our people is good. Because that's our concern. Our people got to eat. They got to be able to get their meds and go on from there.
You know, and Pastor McAfee, we know that. That's why we don't burn down our stuff. I need my pharmacy. I need my little grocery store, such as it is.
Baby need Pampers.
I was going to Reverend McAfee's church in Minnesota. There was Saul before there was Paul. Sign me up, Reverend McAfee.
Oh, man. All that preaching our fathers done through the years, all that teaching our mothers done through the years, down the drain. In a few seconds. Wow. No. Jonathan was the child. I'll put him on blast right now. Jonathan could stay up through anything. He threw parties. He did it all. But somehow when he came to church, he would fall asleep. So our father said, I got something for my son. At the beginning of every sermon, he would have him come and sit in the pastor's chair. You remember that, Johnny?
Yeah, because I could hear, nearer to thee, nearer to thee. My Lord.
And he was like, what? This is misery.
My soul was at one on Sunday morning in the pews.
No. In the pulpit. He put it right there. And he said, this is why. Because I want my son to get this. I love you, everybody. Pastor Tisha Williams, the Anointed One. I see you, sis. Get her book, everybody. Doctors Shanina Knighton and Deborah Furholden giving us the latest and the greatest on our health. The Dean, Dwight McKee. Jonathan, Professor Jackson, National Spokesman for Rainbow Push. And the Anointed Reverend Jerry McAfee, the pastor of the New Salem Missionary Baptist Church in Minneapolis, St. Paul. I can't wait to have you back. And we're going to be watching and waiting and praying. Waiting and praying. God bless you, everybody. Have a great weekend. I'll see you on Sunday on Keep Up Alive with Reverend Jesse Jackson. Have a great weekend, everybody. God bless.